Well, here we are. We're live. Welcome to the third live stream. And we've got quite an interesting show today, I think. I say it's interesting. And the reason being is we've got three guests on today's show. And the point and the continuing drive of what we're doing is to look to wean businesses, B2B businesses, off cold calling and move it and move them to a far more effective way of generating new business. And to do that, it requires some, you could say, a bit of ingenuity, a bit of technical know-how, but the results from it are breathtaking, unlike anything that any B2B organisation has ever experienced before. And one of the fundamental problems is that within business and selling, when it's business to consumer, it's measured in millions of people that you have access to. B2B, it's thousands. And so it's a numbers game. We know this is a numbers game, but we're here to talk about what the numbers are. And so what I'm going to do, I'll play our brief intro and I'll introduce you to everyone else. Okay, well, here's the team. I think the easiest thing to do first is just to explain we're going to have a four-way conversation about how marketing has been done, how B2B marketing has been done, how telesales has affected everybody and how it's being used, and ultimately looking at how businesses acquire the data in order to call people and the experiences that people have had and that people have in general when it comes to businesses trying to generate new business. So I'm not going to, there's more than enough information on our website about everything that we do. So we're going to get straight into it. And I think if we kick off with, I would say, introductions. So Liz, why don't you just share briefly who you are and what you do?
Okay, I'm Liz Main. I currently work for a pretty large software, international software company. Previously, I spent about 15 years in telecom sales, selling phone systems, voice recording solutions, and have done the cold calling on the phone, not so much going out and knocking on doors, but certainly doing telesales. And now I am on the receiving end predominantly of people making phone calls, because I'm the business support manager. So that's me.
Okay, Dean?
Yeah, so I've been in the sales, well, I've got over 10 years of experience in direct sales, predominantly in B2B. I did start off door-to-door, so I do have the hustle culture as part of my DNA, and I've done the jobs where I've been full-time teleprospecting, you know, from 8 in the morning till 6 in the evening some days. So I've done the apprenticeship, if you will. And currently, I'm B2B in the enterprise e-commerce space, selling to online retailers.
Right, okay, cool. And Alex?
Hi, I'm Alex. So I work for MarketScan. We are a B2B data provider. So we've been around since 1982, so we're quite long in the tooth. And what we like to do is help people and talk people through how they can use their lists to the best benefit, so with a mixture of different marketing channels. So we have lots of customers that are doing the telemarketing alone, but then there's others that are doing multi-channel, which where I think today's conversation is going to fit quite nicely into.
Yeah, cool. Well, I mean, we've between all four of us, we talked about marketing, about the methods that are adopted and that exist, but there's never been any change, and we've kind of analysed it almost to death, but to understand why it is what it is and where it stemmed from. And I've kind of written about it in the past about, you know, it started in the 1950s when people were doing door-to-door cold calling, and then it moved into telesales and so on. And really that model hasn't changed a great deal, even when people want to they want email to work. They want it to work to the best of their advantage. And I think it's all because of B2C. B2C have a kind of success ratios that B2B want to have for themselves as well. But they self-sabotage in the way that they do it by using marketing automation and hiding all their content behind email forms, which people end up either not getting access to or not even being able to find them on Google because they're all hidden. So it's kind of like the browbeating process of telesales. I mean, Liz, you get a few calls
per day. Yeah, I do. And I think, obviously more so now than ever before, because all of our team are working from home. So that's one obstacle to overcome. But I have heard every tactic in the book. I mean, I am astonished at the way people will try to get past the gatekeeper. And so, I mean, some of the people that I speak to, sometimes they get very upset with me, very angry with me and moody with me like a teenager, as if that's going to persuade them to transfer their car. Never in a million years. But I also get, I mean, some of the most memorable ones, we were chatting about this yesterday, some of the most memorable ones I've had, I had the guy that told me he couldn't possibly send me any information because I just simply wouldn't understand and it would take him too long to put an email together and explain it to me. And 14 and a half minutes later, because now they've become sport and everybody's sitting in the office, we all think this is hilarious. 14 and a half minutes later, he's still talking to me and I have basically stopped listening until the point I just had to put the phone down because he just wouldn't stop talking. So that's tenacious for you, but tenacious to the point of just being ridiculous. I get the people that pretend to be somebody else. I had a guy phoned me up and said he was one of our sales guys who's actually based in the US and he needed the number for one of our VP of sales in the UK and he really needed to speak to him. He was getting on a plane and hadn't got his number and could I? And I was like, no. And actually the person you're pretending to be is American and you're not American. So he hung up on me. I have had a few people try to contact me, and I think, you know, that you come to the conclusion that actually you can try every tactic in the book, but you are always going to come across somebody like me, somebody who, and sometimes I'm really nice to people, you know, I am, because I've done the job, I know how hard it is. And sometimes I will talk to people and maybe I'll lull them into a false sense of security, I don't know. But I am nice to people, but there are certain tactics that, frankly, you know, oh, can you give me their mobile number? No, it's not. No, you're not having a mobile number. And so more so now than ever before, because a lot of people are working from home, people are just not getting through. It's very, very difficult. And I appreciate how hard it is, but I'm not falling for it.
Do you get many calls? How many calls do you get? I mean,
before we went into lockdown, I would probably get maybe half a dozen calls a day, at least.
Right.
And prior to that, in different organisations, I would get more. I will get more than that. But I think the tactics have now become a bit more aggressive. Have become more aggressive, I would say, in the last 3 to 4 years. You know, people are really... You know, in fact, I had one guy phone quite a long time ago. I said, oh, could I speak to Andy, please? And I said, Andy? And he was like, yeah, Andy Long. And I'm like, okay. He said, I've spoken to him before. I've spoken to him about pensions. And I was like, oh, really? He said, oh, yeah. Like he was really good friends with him. And I said, well, first of all, if you had spoken to him, you would know nobody ever, ever, ever calls him Andy, ever. So I know you've not spoken to him before. You put the phone down on me. So I get a lot of hang-ups. But just because they're not going to get through. But I do probably get about half a dozen calls a day.
And what's the kind of the general consensus or the instructions from like senior management or other people? What's their view on?
I don't want to talk to that person. And I actually find that on the one hand, it annoys me, but on the other hand, I see why they do it. They fill a form in, they download a white paper or a document or whatever on somebody's website. They never put their mobile number. They always put the main office number. So yeah. That to me is just like, you don't want to speak to them, because otherwise you give your mobile number. If you wanted to, if you genuinely wanted to call back, you would give a mobile number. And because they don't, it's because they can't get the information that they want without giving a number. Yeah. And so yeah. Give the main office number, why not? And but I don't know, the instruction is don't give out any confidential, which I consider to be confidential, you know, mobile number. I give out my email address. I don't mind people badgering me, but I do mind them badgering other members of staff that have got better things to do than field calls and field emails. So that's why I don't put them through. It's, you know, you just don't. And I even found that when I was on the receiving, when I was doing the telesales, you know, it was like, no, I can't put you through, or I can't give you any information. I can't confirm an email address. You know, we have a policy of we don't take cold calls. That's it. And you just, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
I'm sure Dean finds that sometimes, that, you know, the gatekeeper is like, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are, you won't get past that gatekeeper in many ways.
Yeah.
Especially on the cold call, I would say.
Dean, what's your kind of, your take on it? What kind of problems did you encounter pre-2020 lockdown? And has that changed over the past 12 months, 12, whatever months? How many, it is 12 months, isn't it?
Yeah, no, fair. It feels like longer, doesn't it? So I can understand why you're trying to count the months there. But I've got quite a different answer to a lot of people. I find it's about the same now. The first lockdown, there was initial shell shock period where everyone just ran for cover and everything was literally on the quiet. But right now, I'm finding it's pretty much the same as it was pre-pandemic, in my opinion, because I was struggling to get people on the phone then. You know, and the conversations I'm having, the meetings I'm having, the engagement I'm having in sales is pretty much at the same level it was pre-pandemic. So I know that there are ways for lead generation. And, you know, and obviously, like some of the ideas we're discussing on these sort of shows, it is testament to the fact that, you know, business can still move forward in these times. But in terms of the phone and cold calling, I was definitely finding it wasn't productive. So if I go back to, say, 2013, 2014, I was full-time banging the phones, 9 till 5 every single day, and it worked. It worked a treat. I was filling up pipelines, filling up opportunities, things were moving, and I'm one of those people that I don't mind putting the work in as long as I can see the fruits of the labour, so to speak.
Yeah.
But for a long time, it's just not been viable. It's just not worked, you know, and the old sort of mentality of, well, just do more, just do more, just do more. I know one of the topics we discuss a lot is how do you scale something. Just doing more isn't really that smart a way to scale something. You know, there comes a point where what more can you do? And to give some examples, and this is like going back to maybe 12, 18 months before the first lockdown, I was calling up teams and they were basically telling me that there's no desk phones in the office. If you want to speak to the relevant people, you need to have their mobiles. Yeah. That was just a fact. And in some of the bigger brands that I was trying to get through to, and the bigger companies, their reception team was changing quite regularly. Quite often their reception team was from a recruitment agency. And you might say, as Derek walked past you this morning, and they'd be like, well, I don't even know what Derek looks like. I've only got a list of names in front of me, and this is all I'm allowed to do. And by default, if anyone had any decision-making potential or decision-making capabilities, they're not going to be on that list. You know, like to sort of coin a phrase of like recent comedy, you know, computer says no. Like, can I speak to Mr. Jones? Computer says no. Like, that is it. Like, there was no way forward. And you couldn't get any more information out of the reception team. Like Liz, you know, she's quite professional. She's been around. She knows her company. So if you speak to a Liz nicely, I think you can get a lot of information. But a lot of these reception teams, they deliberately don't know anything because they don't actually work for the company. Therefore, that
yeah.
It doesn't matter how plausible deniability, Dean.
It doesn't matter.
If you don't know the information, you can't pass it on. Don't give the receptionist any information. She can't, exactly. Then she can't share it.
100%. It doesn't matter how skilled you are at grilling people. If someone doesn't know something, you can't get it out of them. You know, and I've got loads of opinions of speaking to PAs and things because I think they're absolutely fantastic advocates if you speak to them nicely. And then you can get a lot of information, but that's a completely different story. Now you're dealing with people who actually understand the business. Quite often, the people who answer the switchboard numbers, and it's not judging them because they're not smart people. It's just that they don't know the company and they never told anything about the company. So how would they be able to share any information? So to cut a long story short, I think I've gone around the houses there. I'm finding the success of the telephone is exactly the same now as it was pre-pandemic. But I think what's happened is now there's a light shone on it and everyone's suddenly going, oh, it doesn't work. It didn't work before. But now all of a sudden people are a bit more accepting of the fact and starting a discussion around it.
Yeah. I have a preconceived idea. It's not but the tools that people have got to use are all pretty standard in many companies. You know, you've got Salesforce, you've got automation and so on. Is it commonplace to have dialing from the screen?
Not commonplace for me and the sort of places I've worked in, but I'm aware of sort of industries where it is commonplace, and I'm not aware of it really being any more successful. I think what I tend to find is in all of these sort of roles like SDRs and BDRs, it's a real high turnover of individuals. It's individuals, you know, looking to cut their teeth in the sales environment, and without being unfair, they're never going to find out if they're good at sales in these sort of environments, because it's just a case of keep calling. 3 months later, get rid of him, get another one in. And you can tell by the high turnover, and I think we've had this discussion many a time in sales and marketing, people look at the high turnover like the individuals were wrong. Sometimes you have to look at the high turnover and think, well, maybe it was just never going to work. And I do find from a prospecting point of view, they just burn people out. They just get another one.
I mean, one of the things I've written about this before, that just because a company exists and the managing director says this is a great product doesn't mean it's a great product. And then he goes and throws all those financial resources at the company to get the company to make sales of those products, and they do everything they possibly can to begin with, sell to their friends and family, it peaks and then troughs, because then they have to go and sell it properly and it might not happen, and they don't adopt any kind of strategy to it, but they keep saying, right, we'll just get on the phone. That's the basic thing that I understand is telesales, so we keep everybody doing telesales, and that's as far as it goes. I mean, Alex, you and I talked about kind of at length about the kind of the CMO type role and what happens within that kind of environment, and that they, you know, tend to do the same thing over and over. You know, the new person comes in, goes through the persona process, and then repeat. You know,
absolutely. I mean, on the cold calling front, I mean, when I joined the business 18 months ago, did lots of research to see what was happening with the cold calling that everyone was doing, and it really, really wasn't effective. So back end of 2019, early 2020, all cold calling stopped, and it was just a real focus on different marketing channels, different ways of connecting with people. So sessions like this, other seminars that we ran, the team run seminars, the team go on networking, and it's getting your name out and being more personable. And getting across the fact that we're not just data, we're here with other ideas, other solutions, other ways to help you get the results that you want, need, require. And I wouldn't say necessarily that cold calling is dead, but there are certain pockets where it's definitely not going to work. Exactly what Liz has talked about, you know, people are going to go and call the bigger organisations. It's going to be more and more challenging to get through that gatekeeper. And that is a bind. But we've seen our number of dials go down with not cold calling, but the amount of time on the phone increase. Because they're better conversations. It's speaking to people that we've had conversations with in the past. It's making sure that our current customers are getting the results that they need from their data sets. It's talk to people who have inquired at some point, at any point, or downloaded something and given us some direct communication. And then we're having those conversations. We've got not a full-on automated stack, but we've got a reasonable amount set up, enough that we can then be proactive on the phone, because yes, cold calling might be dead, but people buy from people. You still need to have that human interaction to be able
absolutely.
To you know, not just about ensuring that you're getting the most amount of revenue, because it's not just about that, but it's about getting the most amount of value across to your prospects and making sure that they are getting value from your offering, which is from my perspective, key.
I mean, I think that's why, you know, this whole approach to live streaming and looking at how do you start the conversation? How do you even get to a point where you can say, hey, here we are, come and have a look. It's really difficult. Well, it's impossible to do that in any other way, except, you know, chucking loads of information, typically via email. To prospective customers, you know, you can do the manual stuff and go out and meet them and so on, but it's, you know, Liz and I were talking the other day about the numbers involved in communicating, in the ability to communicate with someone. And if you've got someone that's doing any form of telesales from cold, you know, with a company that's going since 1982, you're going to have lots of different people that you've spoken to over the past, you know, 30 years. But the, or more, if you're going to do cold calling, you know, if you could only phone, we did this the other, we took away lunch and took away comfort breaks and took away that time between 9 and 10 and the last hour of the day and said, well, that's what you got to play with. And it worked out to about 60 calls a day if someone was banging the phones. But if we've got this thing about 100-to-1 shot to get through to someone, to find someone that's actually interested, and looking at that process and being able to reach any number of people, of 100 people, you might get through to 10, and of those 10, one might be interested. But that's 100-to-1. But if you're only ringing 60 people a day, it takes you 5 days to get through to however many people, if the ratio has changed in terms of, I mean, your argument, Dean, about it's not really changed at all, and other people have said, well, it could be 200-to-1, 300-to-1 because of lockdown and people not being around. So it's kind of looking at the looking at the ratios of a company's ability to connect with outside or uncontacted people, and I just see it being nigh on impossible. And the only thing the directors seem to know, or most directors seem to know, is cold calling. That's the only way we can do it. We can invest in MarTech and have a MarTech stack, you know, with it, whether it's Pardot, Eloqua or Marketo or whatever, with demand base and all the ABM stuff and everything else kicked into it, and nailed down, and all the different peripherals you can add into it. But it's going through that same thing again for people. And like you said, people buy people. It's all about being personable. I think we were talking the other day. So, you know, if you get
so many variables, though, aren't there? When you phone people, there are so many reasons why that person can't answer the phone. And it might not just be because we don't put calls through. You know, that person's in the meeting, he's talking to somebody, he's away from the office, he's off sick. You know, he's just walked away from his desk for a moment, you know, or the phone's engaged because he's on the phone to somebody else. So there's a ton of different reasons why, even if that person is willing to talk to you, that he might not be available to actually talk to you for a number, lots and lots of different reasons. You know, when I used to work a database, you know, we had like lots of, you could put categories in for why people didn't talk to you. And it's like in a meeting, on leave, you know, all of these sort of things, so that you categorize them. So you could kind of go back and say, oh yeah, the last time I called you were in the meeting, or you were on leave, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But I think because...
I suppose if you've got 100 people, or say it was 100 people, you're able to ring 100 people. If you're only... You, of those 100 people you call, 90 are ringbacks.
Yeah,
and so they go on to the following day. So getting through a large number is just... Yeah.
Well, I think your 200 to one shot is generous, to be honest. Like, if I go back to 2013, 2014, where it was... I literally did it day in, day out. I was looking at about 100 dials a day, and I was whipping through them. But on 100 dials, I got through to who I wanted to speak to on about 10% of occasions. So on 100 dials, I had 10 chats with the right person, of which about 10% of those were what I call good chats. You know,
yep.
9 chats were like nice to know, so thanks for calling me, not interested. But at least I got through to the right person. Of those, I'd say 10% of the test. So one good chat a day. But if you're dealing with B2B and it's a decent sort of ticket item, one good chat a day is a result. You know, because that's 20 sort of good leads a month. That's not 20 deals a month.
You don't celebrate for half an hour.
Yeah.
And that's your statistics.
But if I was to do 100 dials today, I would be absolutely over the moon if I actually got through to who I was trying to speak to on 10 occasions. I think it's beyond just the whole numbers thing. I think the culture's changed. I think, you know, my experience being in office now, if a phone rings, it doesn't mean you need to pick it up. Whereas, like, 10, 20 years ago, 10, 20 years ago, a phone rings in an office, everyone's looking sideways, going, someone's going to pick that up? That's serious. Like, it was a culture, like, you don't leave a phone ringing. Like, we got. I remember, like, 15 years ago, where people used to have, we've got a policy in the office, 3 rings, and it's got to be answered. And things like that. We all remember these policies that used to be around. Now a phone rings, it's like, I haven't got an appointment, so it can't be for me. and the phone's become a tool which I find people expect an appointment. They need to expect it to ring, and I'm not just talking about business either. This is almost like the same in my family life. I can't just call me mum. If I do, it's not that. I don't just expect her to answer it. And 9 times out of 10, I'll get a message back saying, I couldn't answer just then. What do you want? And it's not because people are rude. It's not because people don't want to talk. And like you say, I do think business is personal and people do want to have these conversations, but they want to have them on their own timescales. They don't want them to just suddenly pop up in their life. And, I liked what Alex was alluding to. Like, I'm against the whole thing. It's a numbers game, because I don't think it's a qualitative process anymore. I don't think it's about quantity. It's about quality now. And Alex made that point very clearly and very, very correctly. The phone will never die. Like SEO is dead. We've had all these false horizons before, but the phone will always be there. But it's a more about quality now. The idea that you can just bang it until it gives you a result is a fool's errand right now. You need to use it effectively, and conversations will still happen, but the idea is that they're done the right way, and you're focused on quality conversations, quality calls, which if you do it the right way, they're all diarized and people are expecting you to call.
I mean, I think that's, that it's not the elephant in the room, because that's why we're doing this. The whole thing about live and this is, whilst it's a conversation, yes, it's tantamount. I suppose it's a live podcast in a way. It's just a bit of a delay when you're talking. But the point of this is the way in which that quality conversation can begin. The whole networking mantra, know, like, trust, all that kind of stuff. How are they going to know about you? How are they going to find out about you if you're never around, and if it's just a once in a blue moon hoping, shot at speaking to that business? Because if you don't get their first time round, forget it. And I think, even with the stuff that we do, with the emails that we send out, people self-segment. They want to listen. They don't want to listen. That's fine. And if we're looking at the, looking at reaching people, we kind of settled on this thing about going live and delivering something of quality that people can dip in and dip out of, and therefore the content has been created, and the prospects can see whether or not they like or they would want to work with you at some stage now or in the future. I think that's something that's not really really been available before. It's always been, it's got to be nailed down. It's got to be a webinar. You've got to, you know, if you want to come and if you want to kind of look at us or engage with us, we'll take you on a webinar, but you won't see my face. You'll just see the PowerPoint slides, typically. And you know, there's no option for anybody to be anonymous in order to start to get to know that company. So I think, you know, it's kind of looking at the this process, this overall process, and obviously with Alex, it's as part of this jigsaw puzzle, is being able to identify exactly the types of people that you have dealt with in the past and why you would want to work with them and sell to them, and getting that data. But then I would say understanding the history of telesales and new business development, which is this kind of 100-to-1 or 200-to-1, this thing about trying to communicate with people and that numbers game, and also being aware that 1% of your market are probably going to be looking at any one time. But if you're selling chocolate bars, your market is millions. But if you're selling high ticket e-commerce software, you're talking potentially hundreds or maybe thousands, but it's much less. And so therefore there's this requirement to try and reach those people. And I just think that there's, in my 30 years in doing this, nothing's been available for B2B. There's been no methodology, no mechanism, no facility, ability or tech that has enabled you to do it, unless you want to go on television. And this just narrows it down by doing streaming, but being able to communicate with your ideal market en masse and literally doing this at scale. And that's obviously, that's your bag in a way, Alex, in terms of data. And it's, I suppose, to kind of not talk us through, but share with us, you know, what have you experienced in the past of people looking for stuff? How do they, you know, do they go for a shotgun, scattergun approach, or are they more strategic in their requirements for data?
I'd say it's quite a healthy mix of the two, to be fair. So there are a number of people that is scattergun, and it very much comes down to their products. I know you mentioned about the personas earlier, and that is, yeah, it's a big thing about the persona, and, you know, tailoring your message to the right person, hitting them at the right time, all the old school stuff on that front. But there are some products at the moment that we've seen, particularly with the current situation, where it is a scattergun. Now, in the past, where they may have been solely focused on telephone, that's been more difficult. So we've seen a bit of a shift to more people buying email. However, again, in the last 2 months, we've seen the shift change again slightly, that people are more interested in postal than they are in telephone numbers or email addresses. So we are still seeing people doing different things. And my personal view on postal at the moment, it's a really, really good way of getting in front of people, because the telephone goes, as Dean said, you know, it goes and you can ignore it now. Email marketing, most products are, you know, you're in a saturated market, so therefore people are getting lots and lots of emails about the same thing, and they might shut off to it to a certain extent. Yes, there'll still be people that'll reply, and you can make your email marketing work for you. But postal, you don't get much post these days. So if you've got a really nicely designed postcard or something that's slightly quirky that you're putting on someone's desk, they're more likely to look at it and take note. Not only that, if it's something that's really has taken caught their eye, they're unlikely to throw it in the bin. They'll stick it in their drawer. And then that can have two things that come off the back of it. One, they're going and clearing out their drawer, they have a look at it again, thought, actually, I could do with XYZ product. Alternatively, that person is then recycled with the replacement coming in, looking at the desk, thinking, oh, what's that? That must have been imported because they've kept it, and therefore they investigate what that product, that service is, and you get another bite of the cherry with a new contact that, that can hopefully get in touch. So postal, I think, is something that people really need to consider as well, because it's just, it's so few and far between at the moment.
I like post. I like post. I don't get a lot of post, not anymore. And so it becomes, it's almost like it's novel to get something in the post. It's like, oh, and then be, I suppose, relatively critical. But post can be quite expensive if you're looking at doing it at scale. Because we've still got that primary factor of 1% of your market are looking at any one time. And it's kind of trying to hit them at the right time with the right message, I've done thousands and thousands and thousands of direct mail stuff, and yeah, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, you've still got low percentages, which is standard for direct mail, and this is why I mean, I think lots of businesses have tried lots of different things, and I would say a lot of them are not very sophisticated in their you know, what's available. Exhibitions, can't do them. Cold calling or direct mail or email. That there are very few things that businesses can do to reach out to try and attract new prospects, even just to get their message out there. And that whilst I like direct mail, but to do it repeatedly or at scale would be expensive, especially if you've got a market that, I don't know, like we're going to talk about in a minute, about 10,000. If you've got 10,000 names, you're not going to do a direct mail to 10,000 people every week. And that's kind of where we are with this, this live streaming, of being able to say, come and watch our show this week, and if what we're going to be talking about is this, and here's our schedule for the next 6 weeks. If we don't see you next week, we'll see you the week after. And that, you know, that goes out again and again, doing something similar to this, that type of thing. And I think because it's not been very sophisticated, there's this, I think, tendency for people to think that this is complicated, because it is sophisticated if you want to look at it that way. But it's the reach is beyond anything that they would ever get. You know, you send out 10,000 emails at a click of a button of a mouse.
I think the most complicated thing for people is the mindset. You know, because going back to the direct mail and all these things, I was brought up on the whole direct marketing sort of like way of lead generation. You know, it's 40% list, 40% proposition, 20% in the copy and how you package it. And that kind of covers your email, your direct mail, your prospecting. It's like, right, here's your proposition, here's your list, here's your script, here's your copy. And that kind of is that mentality, if that makes sense. I think what's complicated about this kind of thing for most people is they're like, well, this is all lovely and that, but where's the deals? You know, telling people what's interesting. If you're in a campaign mentality, I call it campaign mentality. If you're in a campaign mentality of, right, I've sent my proposition to this list with this copy, I know that at the end of that, that's my leads. But if I do a live, I think people struggle with, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, where's the leads? Where's the lead gen? And I think that's the most, because like you say, the technical getting it set up is actually relatively easy once they've got it in their head that this is, this makes sense. And going back to like the way I do emails, I kind of got rid of the campaign mentality a long time ago, because I don't know if Liz can share any numbers of her specifics, but everyone I speak to will say they get 30, 40, 50 prospective emails a week. And they're all based on that. This is the list I sent it to. This is the proposition. Do you want to buy it? And there's some sort of a call to action on all of these emails, because it's what I call the direct marketing campaign mentality. And the success I've had with email is by sort of like getting rid of all that campaign mentality and thinking, oh, you work in this industry, here's something interesting, come and check it out, which is a bit more along the lines of what we're doing here. Here's something interesting, you're in the industry, this is relevant to you, come and check it out. Now, all of a sudden, that one email in a sea of 50 or hundreds, which has all got a call to action on it as part of the direct marketing methodology, it's like, well, that one email stands out. It's like, well, that's interesting. Yeah, I do want to know more about that. I am interested. I'll check it out. Especially, and I know you haven't really touched on it much in this episode, especially if it's a low level of entry. They don't have to give you their email. They don't have to give you their phone number. They don't have to put their head above the parapet. They could just come and check it out. And the relationships I've developed that way, I think are fantastic. And I don't understand how more people aren't doing it. The only thing I can say in my head is because people are stuck in campaign mentality of the old fashioned direct marketing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, with you look at the sales process and how long it takes, you know, people want leads, but we know because of all the stats that are out there, you know, I think it's like you've got to get 7 to 10 touches. They've got to see what you're putting forward 7 to 10 times before something becomes familiar. You go, yeah, okay, I get that. And you go, but 1 in 3 get through because it's been deleted, didn't see it, were, you know, wrong mood, blah, 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 which means if, let's call it 10, you've got to produce 30 pieces of information or content to get somebody's interest and accept that two-thirds of them are going to just disappear or fall by the wayside. And the reason being is that you don't know when they're going to be in the market for something themselves, because the driver to buy that B2B product is based upon, is it going to make me any money as a business owner, as opposed to B2C, which is, do I want a bar of chocolate or not? Or those trainers are going to look good on me. So there's different drivers for why they're going to buy something. And I think that, you know, looking at that overall logic, it's, you know, I was told before, you know, years ago, it's a numbers game, it's a numbers game, it's a numbers game. Please, sir, please teach me how to manipulate the numbers and make them work for me. Or just get on the phone.
But isn't the buying cycle lot, I mean, B2B, typically the buying cycle has got to be like 2 to 3 years. And by which I mean, you know, from a business's point of view, you know, if they're looking at things strategically, they say, well, actually, what we want to do, say, for example, it's a phone system or upgrading the computer system. That's not something typically that is done within maybe a 2 month period. You go through a process. I mean, one of my biggest deals that I ever won when I was selling phone systems took me about.
The restream is back up. Don't know where Dean is. Don't know what's happened to him. What can I say? The wonders of modern technology, and then it all just crashes.
Perils of the live demo, as they say.
Oh, yeah. But it's also in the recovery,
all
isn't it?
We've all been there. Yeah, absolutely. We've all been there. You didn't go. I don't think Dean's gone. What we were saying, saying about 70% of people do their research online before they even reach out to you.
Yeah, and then it was
I was literally, before we had our little tea break, I was just about to say that another really good reason to go down the route of the live streaming, the webinars, is certainly on B2B where it differs from B2C. B2C is always very much price led. You know, as a consumer, you will buy anything as long as it's cheap. You won't. Not many people really go to the entire effort of going looking at all of the reviews, but in B2B it's very different, especially if you're working it with a technology of some description, Captera, G2 Crowd, and various other different reviews. So it comes down to trust and value. Are you going to get enough value from the product? Again, Nigel, you were talking about sophistication, that things aren't that sophisticated. But again, this is a, there's a time and a place for sophistication. And you today you've also talked about Eloqua, Marketo, Parda, and those types of products, which are very sophisticated. They can do a hell of a lot. The problem is most people I've ever spoken to that have used them do not utilize them. They do not have the understanding, and to turn it into something that where they do isn't going to be your, you know, $2,500 and you're away. You know, you're talking some serious wedges as a business. It's a lot of your budget that takes from you. Most people I've spoken to use Marketo and Eloqua. You know, you're starting at £4,000 a month. That's a significant investment when there are products out there which can do actually everything that you are using it for at a much more reasonable investment point. And then using the likes of the live streams like this or webinars to really get your point across. People can see you, people know who you are. And I don't mean the death by PowerPoint webinars that you talked about where you don't see the face. I mean, when you are seeing almost the whites of the eyes as much as you can do whilst we're in lockdown.
And it's
a starting point. Then when, if you do get to the point of having meetings, you know who to look out for. You know what they look like. You've heard them speak. You may have had some other dialogues in between, telephone call or something like that. So you can use that as your funnel from live stream through to meeting, and hopefully from meeting through to the dirty word, which is sales.
Wait 1 second. Let me just I got chucked out. You said use the same link and come back.
I think there's an appetite. You know, people want to see who they're dealing with, and you don't see that on an email. You just don't get the personality behind when there's an email going out. And I also think by investing heavily in that kind of software, I think, you know, there isn't really the appetite to, there's so many bolt-ons with something like Marketo. It's difficult for a company to get them all under their belt. And because there's a relatively high churn in marketing in a lot of the, well, across the whole, whether it's lower level or upper level, there's quite a churn of people that somebody that's learned all about how Marketo works, they move on, they get the grass is greener somewhere else, and they move on. And so that resource is lost. And I think with live streaming, you give your...
If you're a true Marketo champion, someone would always pay you more money to do exactly the same.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So that's why you get that churn on those particular...
And it's also that kind of entrepreneurial thinking, isn't it? Because to get Marketo to work well, you've got to have an entrepreneurial mindset and understand how to manipulate the structure of the platform that you've got access to dovetail that with the different people that you want to connect with. You know, there's always a place for it. I mean, even with the live stream, you've still got people looking at getting an email series, or that even if you do want, I think the difference is if you want somebody's information, if you want to track someone to be able to KPI that whole sales process from the beginning, starting in marketing, then of course you're going to have to use that. There is, you know, there are some brilliant, very, very clever packages. But if you say, well, how's it working for you? You know, you look at the extraordinary costs of all of the marketing stack that's required, all the technology that's required, plus the people and resources to make it work. And so because the salespeople, the marketing people wanted KPIs, and they were demanded of them because the company was chucking out so much money to pay for this stuff, it became, well, we've tracked this person from Twitter. We put an advert out on Twitter. We've tracked them. They've done this. We know their inside leg measurement. We know what they've done. We know what they've said to us.
Because the software's capable of tracking everything, therefore the people can be tracked.
Yeah.
So, so you know, I think there is a place for it, but I think in doing live streaming and this kind of thing, you know, people will watch video. People do watch video. We watch video. We watch films all the time. We watch stuff on YouTube all the time, and yeah. So it is. I think it's kind of understanding that you can put out a message to your prospect, to your prospective customers, and share with them who you are, what you do, and welcome them into your business in a way that an email just doesn't do that. You welcome people into your business. When you're on a live stream, you welcome people into your office, into your space, and say, this is me, you know, welcome, come and have a look around, see who we are, see what we do, see whether this is something that would interest you, see whether you could work with us in a way that
I was just going to say that at the moment with the working from home from everyone, I think it's quite a nice thing, you know, the welcoming you into your office, but your office being your home. So it is it is much more about people than I think it has ever been before. You know, all the clips that you've seen of kids coming in. I mean, I've been on a couple of calls. My kids have come in. You know, homeschooling, you can't avoid it. And I actually think it's a positive. I'm not sure I'd say, the kids are asking me a quick question. Obviously, being a parent is the best job in the world. And you've got to support your children. But at the same time, they get to see you working, which is really valuable lesson for them to think that actually I don't just leave the house and have a jolly for 10 hours a day. They're getting nice things because I'm out there working hard, and they get to see that firsthand. I'm just agreeing with the point of letting people into obviously not your full personal life, but an element of who you are as a person.
I think that's so valuable. Impressive. I think that, because I think in a lot of B2B companies, that there's very much the, you know, you've got your family life and your business life are very separate, and I think that the two have come together, and now using you know, welcoming people, you know, whether it's a Zoom call or whatever it is, but in this instance, you know, having a live stream, I think it just shows a far more human element than we've ever had before. Maybe breaking down some of those barriers, those obstacles that, you know, in a B2C environment, we just don't, it's just not the case. You know, B2C, you know, people make emotional purchases. You don't generally make an emotional purchase about a printer, unless your printer's really, really ticked you off and this one is, Sean, you know, is just amazing. But you don't make emotional purchases in the same way as you do in B2C. So
I don't know. I always find it quite emotional buying printer cartridges. just purely for the cost of a new cartridge is almost the price of a new printer. It gets me every time.
I know.
Oh, yeah, that's emotional.
Not quite the same emotional connection as you have when you're buying a house.
And I think this is, I mean, the thing about all of this is that, you know, we've all been doing this, and everybody's had a hand in, whether it's telesales, whether it's, you know, the whole new getting new business process. And, you know, I've been searching for something and looking to, you know, kind of analysing the markets and say, what could we do that not takes the least amount of effort? It's not about that. But it's what gives us the maximum amount of reach consistently and with ease, and, you know, the biggest impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. I was going to say the biggest bang for your buck, because, you know, we've bought a list. You know, we can't possibly phone 500 people, for example. You know, it's going to take us days and days, months to get through to everybody. Whereas if we invite people to look at us, at least we might get, you know, we might get 1%, we might get 10%, but you don't know, but you're certainly going to be putting it out there and welcoming people in and giving them the opportunities to look at you. And, you know, it just, you are going to get the biggest bang for your buck. And if you're going to put you know, if you're going to broadcast this to a large number of people, like 10,000 people or 10,000 businesses, then by the law of averages, you're going to get more people to join
you. But if you've got, you know, if you've got 1%, momentum,
yeah,
and if you've got, 1%, yeah, 1% of 10,000 is only 100 people, but to have the possibility of 100 people watch your live stream is quite spectacular, especially if they stay on there for the duration, and you have a longer conversation with them than you ever could on a phone call as a first phone call. But also, if you've got any questions, all you have to do is just in the comments at the, you know, if you're on Facebook, do it there. If you're on YouTube, do it there, and just type the question and I'll answer the question. I won't mention your name, but just chuck a question at us and we'll answer it. So you're able to do that and have that anonymity that you couldn't before, but it's real, you know, it's in real time. And I think that's the most exciting thing about this. And it can be, you know, it can be a four-way conversation like this, or that you can have five people on there at the same time. You know, one person with four people being spoken to. But it's looking at creative ways of using this technology and saying, well, how can it benefit a company right at the very beginning? You know, right at that initial process of getting the ball rolling. And whether someone does direct mail or whatever, you know, we want to look at, like you said, the biggest bang for their buck. What can we do? And, I mean, we talked before, Alex, about, you know, a company buying 10,000 names and just mailing them and saying, come and watch our live stream, because we only sell to you as a group, as a sector. And so, you know, it becomes that I would like to see the standard, the business process and business practice of saying, if you're in business, you've got to buy 10,000 names and communicate that to your market and do a live stream and do it every week. And that's it. That's the standard new business practice. Forget the cold calling for now. You will still do it because you will still talk to people. But in producing your content and your information, it's, you know, I walk into this when it's all working. I don't want to say anything. But you walk in and just it all turns on and it all works. And you talk and you explain your business, or you talk to a customer, or you talk to suppliers, or you show new products, and it does. You know, you're not writing an enormous script. I just think this is a message from Dean. Oh, he's run out. His laptop's died. And so it's looking at this as becoming a de facto standard for generating new business, because it doesn't need to be completely pre-scripted. You're gonna have an idea of what you're gonna do, but it's the low, you know, the fact that you can have one of these. You can start off with a mobile phone, and then say, right, well, I can go live using my mobile phone. Indeed, you can. But as a business, if you're an X million turnover business and you've got a brand and you have a presence, you probably wouldn't want to do it on a mobile phone. But, you know, buy some kit, it's all tax deductible, away you go. But the only thing, the primary thing that they need to understand is that they need you, Alex. They need you. They need data from a company like yours to say, right, now look at your target markets, your B2B markets. Now look at the people that you are communicating with in those markets, and segment that 10,000 down to the personas if you can. So you're getting all the detail of the sales director, the managing director, the CFO, COO, whatever. So you're getting the most amount of data and the most amount of diversity, if that's the right word, within that data, to be able to produce live streams that are targeted to those types of individuals. So your persona segmentation becomes quite special. You know, I'm talking to the chief finance officer of whatever company, and we're talking about the pros and cons of doing X, Y, and Z. The other CFOs are going to listen to that, but the sales director isn't. And so it's just changing that ability to be focused and targeted on who you want to sell to at any given time. Even, you know, looking at ABM, applying this as an ABM strategy, but not chucking out and banging out loads of emails. You say, come and watch us. You know, and it, you could do streams every day if you wanted to, if it was relevant to different people. Because if you're only sending out...
as well, it's not like you're the old school content marketing where you need to put together, you know, hundreds of pieces of content so you can drip feed them. So obviously we're having this conversation, which is a four-way conversation, people within different industries with different experiences. But you could also have, as you say, with a different sector going with customers that join you. You can have it so you're showcasing what your offering is. So you have a nice mix of different types of content, which what we've been on the call for just over an hour now. And
yeah,
you're doing as it comes rather than sitting down, writing a blog, taking half a day to do that, sending it around to four or five different stakeholders. They need to then decide whether they're okay with it, what changes they want, then spending another half a day rewriting it or starting from scratch, depending on how savage the feedback was. And then, you know, each piece of content ends up taking you, you know, 2 or 3 days. That's not a good use of time. Whereas doing a live stream like this, you know, there's realistically, once you've got all the setup, the prep time is minimal. And we did we had a quick hello yesterday for 10 minutes or so. And then today we did to go through the conversation. So it's a really good time efficient way to get your message out to people.
And what I'll do, what I'll do after this is, whilst it's live stream, I'll do a video because we're going to post this anyway. I'll join the two together. But from that, I'll take a transcript and then I'll post the transcript up. And so that content of that transcript will equate to about 20 or 30 odd pages of content that goes onto our website that tells Google that we've had an expert conversation about live streaming and prospecting. We would be considered, or that piece of content would be considered expert opinion. And it's invaluable. You know, nobody's going to sit down and write all this. Not ever.
No, it just makes life so much easier, doesn't it? And it just gives you those ongoing pieces of content that you can use for forever more. I mean, let's just take it as an example that 3 months down the line, you have a conversation with someone who's, you know, the finance director, as you that you mentioned earlier. Then you can say, actually, go and have a look at this piece. We did this, it was a couple of months ago, but it's still completely relevant for you. Look at the transcript. There you go. Your hour plus an hour yesterday plus an hour tomorrow to do all the linking everything together, you've got some really strong pieces of content that you can use across the board, and it just makes your life a bit easier, a bit quicker, a bit more efficient.
I mean, one thing I just, whilst I've, because this is all live, what I want to do is I just want to assign Alex to guest number two, and then I want to go to here. And that looks a bit better because Dean's not around. Yeah. So, you know, if you're calm and comfortable and you're not flushing from going out, getting all embarrassed because the technology's screwed up, it can look good. It can look interesting. And like you said, doing this type of technology, using this technology, but using it afterwards and pointing people back to it constantly reinforces the personality of the business.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think there are so many positives with this, and I think I don't know whether, you know, my laptop is because mine is not plugged into its power source, unfortunately.
I know that was it. Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to wrap this up now. I think it's been really good talking, you know, having everyone. It's something that needs to evolve. This is kind of cutting edge in terms of B2B delivery, off the cuff, just having people come together and do this type of thing.
Well.
Sorry?
And it's good fun as well.
Well, yeah. And the Absolutely. Main thing is that we've got, yeah, in terms of a call to action, well, of course, there's always a call to action. You contact us, and if you need that, you know, if you to talk about this in a fashion that makes it relevant to your business. And so, yeah, anybody that's watching, if you lasted this long and you came back at the end, then that's great. If not, you'll be watching this as a video. And the point is that you can contact us. You know, our details are above and our telephone number's on there. Any questions you've got, just ask us. I think Liz's laptop has died. we bought a new adapter, and you can't plug the power lead in with the HDMI adapter. Madness. Anyway, we won't have that next time.
Anyway, yeah.
Well, the troopers are left. The troopers are left at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Last man standing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Alex, thanks for joining us.
No, Nigel, great to speak to you again.
I look forward to and I'll catch up soon. Very soon, yeah? All right, then. Bye for now.
Thanks a lot.